Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. You have no idea how much I am chomping at the bit wanting to talk about what's going on in the news, the constitutional perspectives, and so forth. I kind of mentioned in the last show where we were talking, I talked a little bit about coronavirus, and obviously that thing is growing legs, and it is becoming more and more predominant amongst lawmakers as well as the public and so forth. What I want to do, because I'm really this close to finishing and closing out these ratification debates, what we're going to do, we've got seven more citations on Virginia. All I'm going to do is kind of cover and give you a little sampling of Hamilton's drivel, because he gets into political theory, and when they debated the Constitution, he deliberately obfuscated, he deliberately went down this path of stalling because he knew New York would be forced to join, because once they had the 10th state, once Virginia joined, he knew that there was no end, that there was no other outcome other than passing, because New York was not going to be surrounded by members of this union and be the outlier, the odd man out. They didn't fathom that, Rhode Island would take as long as it did, and same thing with North Carolina. But bottom line, I want to finish this so that then I can focus on some marketing, because obviously this is my 29th episode of covering the ratification debate since we started. And there's a lot of things that have happened that we want to do some marketing, but even more importantly, there's some really good conversations that I've recorded with the National Liberty Alliance, as well as with Keith Borders and so forth. And some of these conversations and some of this information, I think, is really insightful. It's really important that you able to get your hands on and digest these concepts, these ideas, and some of the things that need to be done and the things that we're working on, and let you know kind of where we're at. This is the 2020 election, and I'm going to be very, very focused on this upcoming election. And I will tell you that we're going to redo these ratification debates a few more times this year. And there's going to be points in time like this right now where I just really want to kind of put this aside so that we can focus on this. And so whether I do that or not, you're going to have to stay tuned to the Reclaiming the Republic .org website, the Red State Talk Radio podcast page. That's where we kind of put that information, who's coming up and what have you, because what may end up happening as we go through this year is I may be replaying some of these things, some of this content, so you will understand what the heck is going on. So we will try to keep you apprised. And oh, by the way, one of the best things you can do as things really start to happen is we will be making posts on the Mobius Strip Press Facebook page. So if you're not liking that, if you're not following that page, then you probably should, just so you can understand what the heck I'm doing and how we're working with different people and so forth. This is not an organization that is seeking to grow itself. I'm not trying to create, directors and districts and a ground movement. We don't have time to do this. What we have to do is get people that are already in organizations educated and acting and leading their organizations down this path. And so that's why we've, reached out to the Constitution Association first. It's the first organization to get behind Republic Review, and they teach people about Republic Review in Southern California. So Southern California has a good handle on, this concept of Republic Review. It's just that, everyday life kind of constantly consumes you. And unfortunately, Southern California is not going to break free and be able to lead the charge. That's why we're focused in some of these dark red states. So anyway, hope this is all making sense. But we will be getting into some marketing. But more importantly, we have to, and I need to close on these seven citations that I think are noteworthy that we want to delve into. So with that, I need to also inform you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show on the air that is going to give you academic evidence-based solutions. There is no doubt that there are there's a lot of different solutions, and as I try to put it, we don't have to function in a serial process. In other words, you take this one step, this step. I mean, when you walk, you have to take one step after another. When you run a marathon, it's a very serial process. But we don't have to function in our society and as human beings in a serial process in everything we do. We can actually have a conversation while we're running. We can actually perform other tasks while we're doing certain things. We can put things in motion and have, you know, like juggling five balls. We have the ability to do those types of things. And so what we need to do is we need to start looking at what we can obtain and, you know, where we can provide real fruit of our efforts. And not just moving Republic Review forward, because that's going to take a little time, but we also want to make sure that we're supporting other things that will bear good fruit as well, right? Because it's, you know, we can't just live off the fruit of Republic Review. It'll take too long, and in some ways, it won't actually succeed if we're myopic and we're solely myopic on Republic Review. I mean, I am very myopic on it, but you know I support our first right. You know I support the concept of rescinding the 17th Amendment. You know I support states calling for state constitutional conventions and rewriting their state constitutional convention to model more like the U.S. Constitution, to be enumerated and delegating more power down to the county to ensure that the county is vested with as much power as possible in governing the people, and that the states become the supporters of the counties, which is the way our government was supposed to be. It was supposed to be distributive in nature, not collective in nature. In other words, if you understand energy, centrifugal energy being outward flowing, that's the way our political energy should be. It should be centrifugal. But instead, we have a political energy centripetal that's trying to pull everything to the national seat, where the president and Congress and bureaucrats are making all the decisions for us. That's not the design. The design was to be outward flowing, not central flowing or being pulled into the center. So anyway, let me just kind of kick it down a notch, calm down a little bit, and we will be getting into some more marketing shows. I hope to get another update from Lionheart in the near future regarding just, you know, the accuracy, and we can actually have that conversation or at least play that information for you so you know what's really going on in China. Because as you can tell from his first few pieces of information that he sent, we're not being told the truth, and that the news agencies for some reason are lying. But we'll get into all of that once we're all done here, and then we'll actually be able to play some of these interviews, and we're looking forward to doing a lot more with this show. But the other thing I did want to tell you is that we do have a sponsor. Now, I'm not sure if you drink coffee, but if you do, then why don't you try Red State Coffee? If you try Red State Coffee, then you'll actually be supporting the financing for our radio show and some, you know, paying for my gas. I would love it if I didn't have to pay out of my personal pocket all my travel expenses and those types of things. Now, if I get funded, there's this wild possibility that somebody may say, you know, tell me how much you need to function this year. And I'll say, okay, I need $2 million, $3 million this year. Then if I get that type of funding, then I won't even have a sponsor. I will drop my sponsors. We will actually just do the promos that we do, not even putting out commercials, and even minimize that and try to give you more content. By doing that, it frees me up, because then I don't have to spend, you know, a couple more minutes of your valuable time asking you to support us. So anyway, it would be nice if that would happen. It would be nice, but we all have to support ourselves. If we're not supporting our own liberty, and Republic Review is the only way we can restore that, and all of these other things that we're supporting with Republic Review, those are mechanisms that bear fruit of individual liberty. If you're not doing that, then at least, you know, get your head right. Start supporting, start standing up for liberty in any way you possibly can. Because it goes down to that old theory, are you a part of the problem or are you a part of the solution? Because if you're not contributing to the solution in some way, some fashion, by telling people that you need to tune in, by getting people, you know, some basic information, then and you're just sitting on your hands and listening and going, oh man, this is pretty good stuff, but not doing anything on it, then you are a part of the problem. And we want to help you become a part of the solution. So that's why we have, you know, our email address, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. We also have some phone numbers you can call, 425-270-5416. Just leave a message and we will get back to you one way or another. So anyway, let me move on. We're on June 20th, Friday the 20th of 1788. This is Madison speaking. Madison is up, and he is the first one speaking for the day. We just covered the exclusivity of the courts and this exclusivity of government and so forth, and their jurisdiction. And now we're going to get into some more details on this. So when we come back, we will dive into, you know, more details of how Madison is actually explaining the court system and so forth. So we'll be right back after this. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic Review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so this is what Madison says. The second question which I proposed to consider was whether such organizations be made as would be safe and convenient for the states and the people at large. Let us suppose that the subjects of its jurisdiction are only enumerated and power given to the general legislature to establish such courts as might be judged necessary and expedient, but do not think in that case, any rational objection could be made to it any more than would be made to a general power of legislation in certain enumerated cases. If that would be safe, this appears to me better and more restrictive so far as it may be abused by extension of power. Excuse me. The most material part is the discrimination of superior and inferior jurisdiction and the arrangement of its powers as where it shall have original and where appellate cognizance. In other words, the original cognizance and the appeal, you know, regarding the trial process. You have the original trial down at the lower level, and as it goes up the food chain, those are the appeals. Now, sometimes, as I understand it, and I could be wrong because I'm not a lawyer, but I do understand that appeals, 9 times out of 10, the appeals never really retry the facts. What they do is they want to make sure that the trial was done appropriately. That's why sometimes in appeals, cases get thrown out. And that's why, you know, justice sometimes is poorly served because there was some technicality. It's important that at every level, things function the way they're supposed to function. And that's why, you know, ignorance is sometimes very damning. Excuse me. Anyway, Madison goes on and says, where it speaks of appellate jurisdiction, it expressly provides that such regulations will be made as will accommodate every citizen so far as practicable in any government. The principal criticism which has been made was against the appellate cognizance as well of fact as law. I am happy that the honorable member who presides and who is familiarly acquainted with the subject does not think it involves anything unnecessarily dangerous. I think the distinction of fact as well as law may be satisfied by the discrimination of the civil and common law. But if gentlemen should contend that appeals as to fact can be contended to jury cases, I contend that by the word regulations, it is in the power of Congress to prevent it or prescribe such a mode as will secure the privilege of jury trial. They may make a regulation to prevent such appeals entirely, or they may remand the fact or send it to an inferior contiguous court to be tried, or otherwise preserve that ancient and important trial. Let me observe that so far as the judicial power may extend its controversies between citizens of different states, and so far as it gives them power to correct by another trial a verdict obtained by local prejudices, it is favorable to those states which carry on commerce. There are a number of commercial states which carry on trade for other states. Should the states in debt to them make unjust regulations, the justice that would be obtained by the creditors might be merely imaginary and nominal. It alight be either entirely denied or partially granted. This is no imaginary evil. Before the war, New York was to a great amount a creditor of Connecticut. While it depended on the laws and regulations of Connecticut, she might withhold payment. If I be not misinformed, there were reasons to complain. These illiberal regulations and causes of complaint obstruct commerce. So far as this power may be exercised, Virginia will be benefited by it. It appears to me, from the most correct view, that by the word regulations, authority is given to them to provide against the inconveniences, and so far as to be exceptionable, they can remedy it. This they will do if they be worthy of the trust we put in them. I think them worthy of that confidence which that paper puts in them. Were I select a power which might have given with confidence, it would be judicial power. This power cannot be abused without raising the indignation of all the people of the states. I cannot conceive that they would encounter this odium, leaving behind them their character and friends, and carrying with them local prejudices. I cannot think they would run such a risk that men should be brought from all parts of the Union to the seat of government on trivial occasions. Cannot reasonably be supposed. It is a specious possibility, but there is every degree of probability against it. I should as soon believe that by virtue of the powers of collecting taxes or customs, they would compel every man to go and pay money for his taxes with his own hands to the federal treasurer, as I would believe this. If they would not do the one, they would not do the other. And so it's kind of interesting how he kind of lays this out, because now we are paying taxes. I mean, how he talks about these arguments and how things have been actually sequentially done, slowly but surely ratcheting more and more controls, taking control of this. And I want to point out that everything that they've been doing, everything that they've been creating these regulations and so forth, as I was in and have been in lots of different conversations with people regarding, Congress passed this act, I think it was in 1935, and I want to say it was the Regulation Act, where they gave the federal courts the ability to create laws and regulations. Well, the Congress has the power to do that, but the Supreme Court can't make regulations outside of its jurisdiction. In other words, the Supreme Court can't regulate or create a law or create a verdict that becomes law with something that is not within their jurisdiction. Case in point, sexual orientation. They can't make laws regarding that because there's nothing in the Constitution that has given them the enumerated power over those things. Same thing with marriage, same thing with housing, same thing with education. None of these things are enumerated to the federal government. They may be able to make a regulation regarding foreign trade. They may be able to make a regulation via ruling in a case trial or what have you regarding something that they have enumerated. But why are we even concerned about things that they have no enumerated power? Well, the problem is that there are not any more limitations perceived. The federal government believes that they have unlimited powers, that they can regulate anything that comes across their desk, and they can't. And so this is why there is no other path that is going to force compliance and restore our liberty and restore our abilities to do the things we can do. If not, we are going to be regulated and enslaved, because that's the direction of this whole process, is full enslavement to the state. And that is not the design of this Constitution. This Constitution was designed to have checks and balances, but to ensure and protect self-governance. So anyway, forgive me for digressing, but let me get back to what Madison was saying. Madison says, "I am of opinion, and my reasoning and conclusions are drawn from facts, that as far as the power of Congress can extend, the judicial power will be accommodated to every part of America. Under this conviction, I conclude that the legislation, instead of making the Supreme Federal Court absolute stationary, will fix it in different parts of the continent to render it more convenient to render it more convenient." Let me see here. And so he moves on to say, I think this idea is perfectly warrantable. There is an example within our own knowledge which illustrates it. By the Confederation, Congress have an exclusive right of establishing rules for deciding in all cases what captures should be legal and establishing courts for determining such cases finally. A court was established for that purpose, which was at first stationary. Experience and the desire of accommodating the decision of this court to the convenience of the citizens of the different parts of America had this effect. It soon became a regulation that this court should be held in different parts of America, and it was held accordingly if such a regulation was to be made when only the interests of the smaller of the people who were concerned with the captures was affected. And so anyway, I'll get back to finishing this because you can tell we're heading into a break and I wanted to finish this thought. So I'll back up when we come back from the break. But he's talking about how this government was to evolve in serving the republic and not to have the republic serve it. We'll be right back after this.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so let me back up a little bit and I'll reread that. Experience and the desire of accommodating the decision of this course to the convenience of the citizens of the different parts of America had this effect. It soon became a regulation that this court should be held in different parts of America, and it was held accordingly. If such a regulation was made, when only the interest of the small number of the people who are concerned with captures was affected, will not the public convenience be consulted? When that of a very considerable proportion of the people of America will be concerned, it will be also in the power of Congress to vest this power in the state courts, both inferior and superior. This they will do when they find the tribunals and the states established on a good footing. Another example will illustrate this subject further. By the Confederation of Congress, are authorized to establish courts for trying piracies and felonies committed on the high seas. Did they multiply courts unnecessarily in this case? No, sir. They invested the admiralty courts of each state with this jurisdiction. Now, sir, if there will be as much sympathy between Congress and the people as now, we may fairly conclude that the federal cognizance will be vested in the local tribunals. Now, one of the things that that becomes really apparent as I've read through this and I'm understanding common law and civil law, it becomes really apparent that this is a huge, I'll just say it's a gap in the citizens' understanding. What is common law? What is civil law? What's the differences between these? Common law is the fundamental law that is a part of our society. Now, you've got to remember that the Constitution, when it was drafted and written and ratified, it did not dictate any type of law, that the states were free to choose which type of law that they wanted to utilize, as long as they did not violate certain parts of common law. And so one of the things that I've come to, you know, acknowledge and appreciate is with the Seventh Amendment, the Constitution did protect those very essential parts of common law to ensure the common law could not be removed. One of the things I also have grown to appreciate and understand is that as this republic moved forward, what's the best way to say this? A society at that point in time was moving down this path of enlightenment. There were players in leadership and, you know, activists and so forth that recognized that if we continue down a path of enlightenment, it may make it hard to take control of this country. And as I have told you, the plan for controlling the world was actually chartered and or written in 1776. And no, it was not the Declaration of Independence. Adam Weishaupt wrote the charter for the Illuminati in 1776. Now, this is not about conspiracy. This is a historical fact. And the whole concept behind this was the efforts in controlling people. It was about this new innovation of slavery, of enslaving mankind. John Robinson, Sir Robinson, actually wrote a book, and I've talked about it. It's on my website. Go to the Red State Talk Radio podcast page on reclaimingtherepublic.org website, and you'll find a PDF copy of that book. It is proofs of the conspiracies to eliminate or destroy, and I'm paraphrasing the title because it's a long title, but it's proofs of the conspiracy that there is an effort to destroy the religions and governments of Europe. Well, actually, that the conspiracy wasn't just focused at Europe, it was focused at the world. And as the world kept on growing, this plan and this conspiracy, I'll call it a plan, started changing and adapting to how they could get their tentacles and their arms around all of us. It was adaptable. In other words, they could change it, but the fundamental plan was to actually take over education and use tolerance in getting society to debase itself. Because if you start tolerating immorality, if you start tolerating sin and debauchery and those types of things, it starts leaking and leaching into your community, into your home. To next thing you know, your kids have been, you know, indoctrinated, or at least have been exposed to these, you know, these things that they have allowed themselves to become either addicted to games, video games, violence in the video games, or adult types of themes within these video games. They're using anything and everything possible to debase our society. We were moving in a direction of enlightenment, And they knew that as we became more and more enlightened as a society, that it would be harder and harder to tumble us. So they actually started gaining controls of these little things to start sending us in different paths. And that's, if you really want to look at a very good video of how things had kind of changed, the concept of ending slavery throughout the world, there's this guy that had a video that showed that when slavery started getting abolished throughout the world, productivity of mankind went up dramatically. All of a sudden, the what you would think would have been, even greater productivity in the United States, more and more and more, something happened, and our growth wasn't exponential. It wasn't continually growing at this exponential rate. It actually started getting hampered, and other states, other nations actually started doing better. I believe that is because we had abandoned the principles of enlightenment that was actually, responsible for founding this country. So anyway, let me get back into what Madison was saying, because I just talked over half of this segment, and I didn't mean to do that. Madison was talking about jurisdiction at this point, and he says, "I have observed the gentleman supposed that the general legislature will do everything mischievous they possibly can, and they will omit to do everything good which they are authorized to do. If this was a reasonable supposition, their objections would be good. I consider it reasonable to conclude that they will as readily do their duty as deviate from it, nor do I go on the grounds mentioned by gentlemen on the other side that we are to place unlimited confidence in them and expect nothing but the exalted integrity and sublime virtue. But I go on this great Republican principle that the people will have virtue and intelligence to select men of virtue and of wisdom. Is there no virtue among us? If there be not, we are in a wretched situation. No theoretical checks, no form of government can render us secure. To suppose that any form of government will secure liberty or happiness without any virtue in the people is a chimerical idea. If there be a sufficient virtue and intelligence in the community, it will be exercised in the selection of these men, so that we do not depend on their virtue or put confidence in our rulers, but in the people who are to choose them." Now, I will just say this. Madison's absolutely correct. But if you educate them on what virtue should be and not what it really is, then you start shifting paradigms. And so all of a sudden, we no longer have these paradigms of what real virtue is. Virtue is being able to make money. Virtue may be able to, have power. We have perverted so much of our government and our principles through these efforts by these people. Some of these people had good intentions, but what they did was they created these footings that would literally lead us in a direction that would take us down this path of our own demise. And so anyway, let me go back into reading what Madison has more to say regarding this jurisdiction. "Having taken this general view of the subject, I will now advert to what has fallen from the honorable gentleman who presides. His criticism is that the judiciary has not been guarded from an increase of the salary of the judges. I wish myself to insert a restraint on the augmentation, as well as the diminution of their compensation, and support it in the convention. But I was overruled. I must state the reasons which were urged. They had great weight. The business must increase. If there was no power to increase their pay according to the increase of business during the life of the judges, it might happen that there would be no such accumulation of business as would reduce the pay to most trivial consideration. this reason does not hold as the president for in the short period. So we'll come right back to this reason does not hold the president, because he's talking about compensation and paying for judges and so forth. This is fascinating because you've heard me talk that we do not compensate our sovereigns appropriately. We will be right back after these two promos. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so clearing the throat again. This reason does not hold as to the president, for in the short period in which he presides, this cannot happen. His salary ought to not therefore to be increased. It was objected yesterday that there was no provision for a jury from the vicinage. If it could not have been done with safety, it would not have been opposed. It might so happen that a trial would be impractical to the country. Now, let me just kind of stop. Got to understand that the reason they were complaining about judges, because a judge appointment is a lifetime appointment. Some of these judges were serving the court for 40 years. Understanding, and what Madison said, businesses change, businesses increase. I think he was kind of more relating towards the economy, the cost of living, those types of things increase. And people understand that over time, your property and things increase in price and value. If you tied the judges to a set salary, that they couldn't get pay increases because it would be dictated when they went into court, okay, that's all you get and you can't get more. It's the same thing with the Senate. It's the same thing with the president. When they go into their term, their compensation is set. It can be raised for the next term. It can be raised for the next term. It's the same thing with the Senate. The whole point is that, you know, they're only in term for 2 years or 6 years. Therefore, their compensation is set at a certain amount. Putting all that aside, you can understand that when they come back for their next term, their second term, the third term, the fourth term, their compensation may go up, but a judge doesn't. Now, I don't know if, and there, you know, I actually want to have conversations with really smart people to talk about things just like this, as far as compensation goes, what would the framers do now if they had an understanding? Would we still have a Supreme Court the way we have it? In other words, the final arbiters being 9 judges or 7 judges or whatever it was when they originally intended, now it's 9. Would they still have that disposition, or would they, because, you know, my idea, and I'm going down this tangent to getting away from this, but this is, I think this is where, when you start immersing yourself in this stuff, you start thinking of maybe even better ways, because we have a perspective now that's a lot different than the framers' perspective. I don't think that we would need to have a permanency of the Supreme Court anymore. I honestly don't think that these positions need to be lifetime positions, except for one, the Chief Justice. I would love to see each state actually provide its own judge, so that that judge then has more cognizance of representing, because having a representative form of government, we really don't have representation in the court, if you understand what I'm saying, because most people would only think of their perspective of where they come from. If you had, and as a case in point, and I've proved this, if you have judges, or if you have appointments to the Supreme Court, which are lawyers that are all from the South during the early years of the court, then you will probably find that the court is far more sympathetic towards slavery. And that's exactly what happened. Why the court, or you start finding those other people throughout the different parts of the states that are still sympathetic towards those concepts of slavery and so forth, are ideologues of that ideology. And next thing you know, you've got a stacked court that basically is going to run you into ruins. Now, getting back to my idea, and I'm going to just want to follow this to fruition, if every state appointed for a period of time who they would have as their judge by election, because we do elect judges in our inferior courts, then we would probably have a much better court system, because you would have 50 judges, and then the Supreme Court, or I should say the Chief Justice, would be the deciding vote, right? If you had a true split of 25 states and 25 states, just like in the Senate, when you have 100, because you have 2 senators from each state, you can. There's always a possibility of a split or a tie. The vice president is the deciding vote. Well, I think the Chief Justice could easily play as the presider as well as the deciding vote. And so I honestly think that the Supreme Court, you know, could be looked at and revamped as how we could probably deal with, you know, an improved Supreme Court. Because bottom line, the framers understood what kind of mechanisms to play on, or I should say how to lay it down. And I'll even say this, maybe they didn't, but the divine hand of providence definitely did. So anyway, let me get back to where I was, because I went on this tangent, so forgive me. If it could have been done with safety, it would not have been supposed. It might so happen that a trial would be impracticable in the country or in the state that they're talking about. Suppose a rebellion in a whole district would, if not, be impossible to get a jury. The trial by jury is held as sacred in England as in America. There is deviations from it in England, yet greater deviations have happened here. Since we established our independence, then have taken place there for a long time, though it be left to the legislative discretion, it is a misfortune in any case that this trial should be departed from. Yet in some cases, it is necessary. It must be therefore left to the discretion of the legislature to modify it according to the circumstances. This is a complete and satisfactory answer. It was objected that the jurisdiction would extend to all cases and annihilate the state courts at this moment in time. It might happen that there are many disputes between citizens of different states, but in the ordinary state of things, I believe that any gentleman will think that the far greater number of causes 99 out of 100 will remain with the state judiciaries. All controversies directly between the citizen and citizen will remain with the local courts. Now, see, that doesn't happen. Let me just point this out. And actually, I want to highlight this. All controversies directly between citizen and citizen will remain with the local courts. My friends, that is not happening. There are times when people say, you've taken my civil rights away. And that goes all the way up to the Supreme Court when it's not supposed to. It was never designed to be taken away from the lower courts. And Madison just points this out. Anyway, he goes on and says this. The number of cases within the jurisdiction of these courts is very small when compared to those in which the local tribunals will have cognizance. No accurate calculation can be made, but I think that any gentleman who will contemplate the subject at all may be struck with this truth. And then right after he said that, Madison started speaking so low. Maybe he just turned away a little bit so that they just couldn't hear what he was saying, but they missed some of the stuff. And then they picked up a little bit more. And so Madison continues for another good paragraph before, you know, Mr. Henry gets up and starts readdressing it. And I'll try reading this, but I'll pretty much wrap this one citation up. As to vexations, appeals can be remedied by Congress. It would seldom happen that mere wantonness would produce such an appeal or induce a man to sue unjustly. If the courts were on a good footing in the states, what can induce them to take much trouble? I have frequently, in the discussion of this subject, been struck with one remark. It had been urged that this would be oppressive to those by imprudence or otherwise come under the denominations of debtors. Now, one of the things that kind of rings out here with me that I kind of want to share here is this concept of the court systems and their paradigm. These men truly believed that men would always have this attachment to their honor and to their integrity. They had no idea that we would become so perverted that men would no longer care about their integrity and their honor as long as it paid. You know what I mean? And how many times do you see that we've glorified, you know, lying and dubious conduct and the complicity, or I should say, the fact that people are willing to become corrupt in serving themselves for being at a greater trough of power. Our history was laid in one direction, and we've become so perverted that that's why some of these things that Madison just couldn't imagine has come true, is because we have separated our honor and our integrity. We have allowed our society to become debased. And the way we did it was through the path that Adam Weishaupt talked about, through education and through tolerance. Oh, well, we want to get these people to tolerate this because then we'll get them to tolerate the next thing. It's the same thing with this sexual depravity that's just going rampant. Now they want to start supporting incest. They want us to start being tolerant towards incest, bestiality, and these other things. There is no limit to going as low as they want to take us. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am
trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.